Hi, I'm Yaakov Katz, and welcome to a new episode of the Jewish People Policy Institute's Inside Analysis of the State of Affairs in Israel and the Jewish World. As the fighting continues in Gaza, and as the debates begin at The Hague over the genocide charges brought against Israel by South Africa, we take a look inside Israel at one specific sector, the Haredim, the ultra-Orthodox. We're looking today specifically at the question of what will happen after this war, and will the Haredim begin serving in larger numbers in the IDF? I'm joined by three guests on today's show. The first is Yossi Levy, the CEO of Netzach Yehuda, what's also known as Nachal Haredi, the first battalion, the IDF unit that was created to integrate Haredim into military service. I'm then joined by two of my JPPI colleagues, Rivka Ravitz, a senior fellow who served as the chief of staff to Israel's President Reuven Rivlin, and Professor Michal Bar Asher Siegel, a Talmudic scholar and a JPPI fellow who also serves as the vice president at Ben-Gurion University. Let's go. Yossi Levy, it's great to have you with us on the JPPI podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, especially from, I know you're in reserves right now. I'm looking at you in your uniform, and I know you're doing a lot of important work for Am Yisrael and the Jewish people, so I just want to thank you for taking out the time to talk to us. The reason we're talking is you are the CEO of Netzach Yehuda, which I guess some people might still recall by its prior name of Nachal Haredi, but basically the infantry brigade or battalion that is what integrates ultra-Orthodox Jews into military service. And you have basically taken upon yourself this objective or this goal to do even more, to integrate even more ultra-Orthodox. And I just want to frame the conversation by the fact that this is a hot issue. It's a big issue. It's a controversial issue for Israel. And it's going to come back, I think, and I fear to some extent, with a lot of even more controversy when the war in Gaza is over. So I'd love to hear your thoughts of what is the situation right now? What do you want to see happen? And how can we avoid, I know it's a lot, how can we avoid that collision that could happen within society when the war is over?
Okay, so first, let's speak about what's the reality today. So we have in Netzach Yehuda close to 1,000 soldiers in Netzach Yehuda battalion in the training base, in the army service, let's call it active army service. And then there is a year, the third year of the army service, we're giving them the option to learn academic, the first year of academic, to be in the same level of every soldier in the IDF, because they must do they must integrate to the economy right after the IDF service. So this is the process.
And just let me just interrupt you. Your numbers of workforce participation from graduates or soldiers who have been through Netzach Yehuda is very, very high.
I saw a research, I think 7 years ago, someone did a professional research about Netzach Yehuda, and they found that Netzach Yehuda veterans, they are in the economy more than standard people in Israel. Let's call it in percentage. You can see that Netzach Yehuda veterans are more than 91% in the economy. It's more than the highest level. Yeah, the average and the highest level in the armed religious people in the Israeli society. I'm not talking about the Haredi people. That's only 55% today, and it's the highest number ever, I think. So this is Netzach Yehuda Battalion, and except Netzach Yehuda Battalion, you have another unit in Sanhanim Brigade and in Givati Brigade and in the Air Force. So it's not only Netzach Yehuda. Even in intelligence units, you can see a lot of Haredi soldiers, I think hundreds. So this is today, it's close to 3,000 Haredi soldiers in the IDF. This is one. Second, it's nothing. Because in the Haredi society, if you're going to see the demographic, you can see that the sector in Israel that grows up more than everyone else, it's the Haredi society. And we all know that. And it's still only 10% from the society that comes to the IDF. And before the war, everyone can think that maybe the next war will be Air Force and intelligence units. But this is conception. We all understand now that we need the infantry units, and we don't have enough soldiers.
And Netzach Yehuda right now, right, is in the Gaza Strip.
So they split Netzach Yehuda. Two or three companies still in the north. we have to remember that the north much more danger than the south. So now three companies in the north, and when two companies, one company from the battalion and one company from the commander's course of Netzach Yehuda in Gaza, they are after 90 days in Gaza, so they did professional operations there with all of the unit, and they're doing amazing work. By the way, the Kfir Brigade, it's a new brigade. It's the last brigade that the army built. And now Kfir Brigade at the first time in Gaza. But let's leave Kfir Brigade in the side. We're talking about the Haredi society. So we all understand that they will be the biggest sector in Israel in 40 years. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it's not going to be far. And we must see the Haredim, the ultra-Orthodox people in the IDF, in the security, in the economy. By the way, the security influences economy. Because, as I said, most of the veterans are in the economy, in professional places. I learned computer science right after the IDF service. And before that, I was only in yeshiva. So I didn't know even...
Right, so you don't get in what people might not know is that in the Haredi schools, you don't get the math, English, science, computer proficiency. So you have to get that. That's why you offer Netzach Yehuda, the 2 years of service, and then the extra year to catch up, basically.
Exactly, exactly. I grew up in Haredi's community, and I learned only Torah all the day. I learned in Cheder. It's the school, the Haredi school. And then to yeshiva, standard yeshiva in Betar Elit, and then to yeshivat Meir, it's the biggest yeshiva in the Haredi society. And in one day, I came to the IDF. I don't know why, by the way. In the beginning, it was for, I don't know, maybe I thought about to be a fighter. It's something that sounded good to me. Or maybe because I heard that there is the third year that I can learn a degree. But it's a joke, because I can learn a degree outside of the IDF. But This is the reasons, until today, by the way. And then I did my army service. I'm now a deputy battalion commander. I'm in the middle of battalion commander's course. And for me to do that, let's call it revolution, for me, it's something very significant. And then it's open.
And correct me, wait, Yossi, I'm sorry to interrupt again, but if you, when you finish the battalion's course and when you become what we call in Hebrew a magad, correct me if I'm wrong, you will be the first Haredi magad in the army?
Yes, I tried to find another Magadim before me, and I was very surprising to see that I'm going to be the first one, and I don't like it. We need to see Haredim in the highest level of the IDF commanders, and it's not the reality yet. We still have a lot of work.
So how do we change that? How can that be changed?
So I must tell you that the main problem is that I don't believe that the government wants it. Because if the government really understand the mission, it's the most important mission for the Israeli society for the next 10 years, for sure. Because, as I said, we need fighters, we need economy, and this is the main option to make it happen. So the government must invest on it. So I must tell you that the government didn't build even one a real plan to integrate Haredim in the IDF. And maybe in the economy, yeah, but in the IDF, no. So, and I didn't say that. The Major General Roni Numa did a big research about the IDF, not research, even let's call it investigation. And because people said that the Haredim are not involved in the IDF, and the chief of staff wanted to check it. So he gave Roni Numa, the Major General, to do a big investigation about integration Haredim in the IDF. And he wrote the first result was that the government didn't build even one plan to integrate Haredim in the IDF. So it's only based on people like me, like David Hager and people that and the board of Netzach Yehuda, Steve, and another people like this, that took the mission. They've given a lot of money to Israel to make it happen, and we are doing it. So now we have 10%. Our mission is to see 30%, 40% from the Haredi society and the IDF.
So you need government plans that can create special tracks that can integrate the Haredim. But let's also be honest, Yossi. the rabbanim, the rabbis, are not yet there. They're not in favor, the most of them. Some are, and there are some brave ones, but most of the rabbis do not want to see their students leave the yeshivot and go into the army.
So I must tell you like this. There is two options to work with the Haredi society. I heard a lot of people that says, I don't want to work with the rabbis. I'm working from the field and it's worms. I don't believe in it. There is two levels of work that we need to do because if we want to be success. So the first level is the leaders. So we don't based on the leaders, but we must work with the leaders because at the end of the day, the parent of Haredi youth will come to the rabbi and the rabbi will say, don't send them to the IDF, send them to the yeshiva, another combination. And I don't believe in it. So if we want to see the parents send their boys to the IDF, we must work in the level of leaders. And we are working hard in that level. And I must tell you, I don't know if you saw it, we have a memorial ceremony every year. A very nice event with a lot of people, more than 1,000 people every year. When we started, no one from the Haredi Society, from the leaders, came to the event. And please, we are talking about people that died for Israel. We must give them the memorial day, the respect. And they didn't show up. After 1 year, we saw 2-3 people from the leaders, from the main leaders of the Haredi Society. Last year, so I saw 20 of them, but it's not only the 20, it's the main 20. Like Aryeh Deri, like the chief rabbi of the Haredi, of the Sephardi community, Rabbi David Yosef, and another people like Rabbi Schlesinger, it's the one of the biggest rabbis in the Litai community.
So it's become more mainstream, is what you're saying.
Right. And that gives us the support from the leaders. This is one. And second is the field. If you want success, we must work very professional in the field. So what we did in the past 3 years, we opened a pre-army programs. We have now 5 pre-army programs, like Mechinot, like Yeshivot Esder, Haredi Yeshivot Esder. And then we have more than 200 students. And in 5 years, our mission is to make it with 1,000 students.
So I want to talk to you, though, about the day after this war, because I think you and I will both agree there is a lot of anger. There's a lot of frustration. There are people in this country who look at, let's say, where the Levayot, where the funerals are being held, and they see that they're in Jerusalem, and they're in Tel Aviv, and they're in Kibbutzim, but they're not in Bnei Brak, and they're not in Beitar Elit. And people are going to say, this can't go on. You can't have a situation where one sector in society, the Haredi sector, is not serving. Now, we could go your track, and we could wait, and we could try to work, but there are going to be people who are going to say, cut off budgets, punish them. You know, give sanctions against yeshivas that don't send. There's going to be an uproar. And my question to you is, how can we avoid that?
So I believe that we have to do something very hard and very fast to integrate Haredim in the ideas. I believe in it. But if you're going to look at the past, like, let's say in 2014, we saw the plan of Yair Lapid. He was the Minister of Finance, with another people like Rabbi Shai Piron. And if you remember, in 2014, we had the Operation Tzuketan. And Operation Tzuketan did to the people in Israel, I'm not going to say the same, because it's not going to be the same, never, ever. But it's still operations that's a lot of mothers sent their boys to fight in Gaza, and the Haredim not. And the Minister of Finance tried to do the plan to take all of the Haredim by the law to the IDF. And it took us from 20% of the Haredi society in the IDF to 10% until today. It's not going to work. When you try to bring, you can speak to my brother. When I started the IDF, he was really against it, really against it. And until now, he's against the IDF. But if you're going to ask my brother, first, if he's supporting us today, he will say yes. It's different. From the beginning of the war, he called me every day. And before that, he didn't speak with me about the idea. And he's calling me every day. What's happening in the IDF? How do you feel? It's crazy. And second, if you're going to try bring him to the IDF by force, he will go to jail. He don't care about it. Not my brother, not a lot of people. They want to learn Torah. This is the main value of the Haredi society, to keep the values of the Judaism forever. This is the main value. And for my brother, he don't care, what do you think? And he don't need your money. He will deal with it. So it's not the way. The way to do it is to do it very fast, but to bring a lot of people to the IDF with a real plan. We didn't do it until now. So we must do it very fast, very strong. So what we did from the beginning of the war, I can tell you what we did. We brought more than, I think, or close to 1,000 Haredim from the mainstream to a project that's called Shlav Bet. Of course, it's only 2 weeks. Of course, they are not involved like fighters. But still, we normalize the uniform in the Haredi street. And this is the main mission. And when we will normalize it in every street, we will win.
So you think a plan that works both ways, top, bottom, normalization, will have the desired effect? It will take longer. Maybe it will take time, but it will work.
Yeah, and the pre-army programs. This is really the game changer, because we have to understand that the young man today, he is in let's say, in the option to think about the IDF, not when he's 18 years old. Today, it's 16 years old and even less. So if we are not going to walk in that ages, we're going to lose a lot of Haredim. So now our new programs of pre-army programs, I believe that this is the game changer.
Yossi Levy, the CEO of Netzach Yehuda, I want to thank you very much for joining us. And thank you very much for your service in Miluim and reserves, you know, over the last 3 months. Yeah, I can only imagine how complicated that is. But thank you, everyone, for helping keep us safe. And thank you for all your work. We appreciate it.
Yaakov, thank you very much for the stage.
So that was Yossi Levy from Netzach Yehuda. And I think, you know, anyone who watches and listens to him and has gotten to know those soldiers over the years that they have served is genuinely moved, right? It's a lot of stories of people who come from backgrounds that they fell out of the yeshiva network or system and were looking for something else to do. And this was a perfect program that was able to somehow manage to an extent the quality or the rules of that they were required within their community, like bases without female soldiers and things along those lines, and also given the opportunity, as Yossi explained, to have that third year of study. But this is, the numbers are small, and even Yossi admits that. So, I want to start with you, Michal, and get your sense of what do you see happening in the general society in the aftermath of this war. And I think I'm getting already a bit of a taste of it, of what's potentially to come.
It's not just the aftermath of the war. Personally, I feel this way, and I think the people around me feel the same way. It's also the aftermath of a year of judicial overhaul that the Haredim society and that sector had a lot to do with that change or the attempt to change norms in Israeli society and to divert certain funds in certain direction. And I think we are speaking, representative and self-claimed representative of a certain milieu that feels that we are not in the same place as before. If before stories such as these made me very hopeful that this is just the beginning for something else, I'm not there anymore. And I think the reason that I'm not there and I'm feeling much less generous to certain people talking about leaders of the Haredi society and have to come in conversation with them and being able to bring them to the general society, I want to talk about the prices and the prices that we pay in order to bring them in. And the prices are felt very, very acutely. And I think in the past year and a half or so, we're feeling and sensing them very, very powerfully. And the question is when does the price get too high? Well, I think we all agree that we would like to see the Haredi community much more integrated and share the responsibilities of paying taxes, and serving the army, and some of the stuff that we do to make this country happen. So we were definitely all on board on that. What's the price? And I'm going to start with the obvious price, which is the price for the 50% of the population that live here, women. In order to incorporate men in the army, women need to step back, not be in certain parts, not being able to serve a certain guide in the army, not certain parts, not being able to sing in events, not even to be present. This is something that is not theoretical. It's happening. And it's not happening just in the army. And it's happening in the world around us. I'm fighting a very, very strong battle for women in higher education, where in order to incorporate Haredim in higher education, we women have to pay a price. For example, women cannot teach men in those separated, which is against the B'chat's decision, but still happens in Israel, against the rule of the law. So we don't have good mechanism to defend us against the surge. And on the other hand, this is on the table, that women will have to take a step back in the parents and what they can do with whatever. So when does the price get too high? And in addition to that, the willingness of certain parts of the society to join the army and take part of the general is always accompanied by the fact that we have to compromise because they have their share of values. And theoretically, the Chiloni part don't. So we will have to settle. Not that perception needs to change. We have values. Our values are values of equality, of women's rights, of minority rights. We cannot give them up to bring forth a group that doesn't share our values. That's a problem that we need to talk about. We keep talking as if we have to settle and respect a group that doesn't see women as equal to men. I come from that society. I was raised this way. I teach these sources. I know them very well. We can't hide from the fact that this is what stands behind separating women from men. Women are seen as sexual objects, not as subjects. This is a problem. It's something that will, you know, deter men away. And when we join forces and agree to certain limits on women in order to bring them forward, which is a very, you know, a goal we all share. But what's the prices we pay on the way? And is it still worth it? What's going to be left at the end? Are we giving up women's rights in order to bring them in? Are we giving up gay rights? I haven't even started to talk about that. So I am, to conclude my answer, much less optimistic about this goal and this aspect. And I'm truly terrified of what it means to start playing that kind of a game of settling or compromising.
Okay, thank you, Michal, for that answer, which brings up this whole other aspect of the integration of ultra-Orthodox of Haredim in society, which I was not thinking about necessarily, but so I'm glad for the perspective of what's happening in higher education and what that does for women and for their availability or ability to be able to teach. But I wonder, you know, at the end of the day, also a country and a nation has to balance between different interests. And if the interest is we want to get more ultra-Orthodox into the workforce, is that a price we pay? Is that not? I don't know. And I'm not expecting an answer right now, but I think it's these are some of the very complicated issues that we face, because we also have a time bomb, and I hate to call anyone a time bomb, but there's a demographic ticking issue here that they will become by 2055, which is around the corner, about 30% of Israeli society. So we also have that to deal with in getting them into the workforce.
Correct you on that. First of all, the numbers are always problematic, and we've been seeing those numbers, and they're, you know, they don't take into account changes in the society, etc. I'm not going to talk about that for some. Let's assume you're right. It doesn't mean that I have to give up now. If you're telling me that women will not be able to be portrayed on billboard in 50 years, do I have to settle for that now? If women cannot, you know, this is something that is we have to. We're talking about programs of Siud where women are not allowed to practice on men before they become nurses in the hospital. And then they go to the hospital and then they have to practice. What does that mean, this whole society we're creating with separate, you know, programs in higher education, but also in the army? What does that mean when we don't let women take part in order to allow for other groups? And so you're telling me, give up your right because the country needs to settle to bring Haredim in. Maybe. But, you know, I would want to fight before that happens, because there's something needs to be said about asking me to give up very, very crucial parts of my identity, my ability to be equal when we go into a room, to be looked at as equal, to be able to do everything that a man does. That's something that is so crucial to my being, that if that's taken away in order to allow for someone else who doesn't believe that to exist more than me, that's something that I need to say, okay, is it still worth it? Do I want to collaborate with someone who doesn't see me as equal? There's some, at some point we have to say, what?
I understand. No, I got it. And I think these are very important issues, but I also want to give Rivka, who's been waiting patiently and I'm sure has a lot to say on all of these different issues, an opportunity to respond. So Rivka, I mean, you know, I'm sure you have a lot to say about what Michal was just talking about. And I know you probably have what to say also about what Yossi was talking about with regards to the IDF draft. And as someone who comes from the community and is a, I guess that you define yourself, I don't want to define yourself for you, but you are Haredi, right? I think that as part of the Haredi community. So you have a good finger or on the pulse of what's happening. Give us your insight.
I wanted to talk about the importance of learning Torah, but first answer Michal, and I'll say that what Michal said brought me to understand, and I understood it a long time ago already. When I was working with the president, I already understood that. The Israeli society, the government, the IDF, is not willing to get the Haredi community into the IDF or into academics or into things like that. What Michal was saying is reasons, but the real thing, I think, is they are afraid. And I could understand them. It's really frightening. I'm also sometimes afraid. And really, but let's say, Michal, if you said you won't want a Haredi class in your university because you won't be able to teach them, you were not supposed to teach those people anyway, because if you won't let them separate, so you won't teach, they won't come, so you won't teach them anyway, and you won't serve them anyway if you won't let them keep their beliefs and stand for their values. So of course I understand your values, and your values is mine. I'm a feminist, and I believe in a woman. I feel sometimes bad in some situations. But I understand that if we want to let those people to make such a big change in their lives, a change in our lives, if I talk from your side, and if if the universities won't let separate classes, so it won't work. And separation is not always, it doesn't mean depressing women, but that's a long lecture. So that's for a different time. But I want to say something else. I think I said it here once, but it's so important. As I said, there's 15 million Jews, or maybe 18 million Jews, if you listen to Pew or to the Sochnut, or I don't know. But there are a lot of millions of Jews. There are only hundreds of thousands of students that are learning Torah. We as Haredi, we believe world in 6 days for the Torah. That was the reason that God built this world. He wanted people to learn his Torah. And out of 18 million Jews, there's less than a promille that are learning his Torah. And their lives are not vacation. It's not so easy. I said it a few times here. They wake up very early. They learn from, they daven at 7, and then they learn from 9 till 2, and then again from 4 till 7, and then they have a break for supper, and they learn again from 9 till 11. So it's like 12 hours a day, more than 12 hours a day of learning, and they get just 1.5 months off a year. So it's not a vacation, not sitting in Hawaii or something like that. They are working very hard, and they are keeping something that they believe it's their tradition, and they believe that the world was born for that. So that's just for understanding the termination.
So Rivka, I appreciate that, and I respect that. I do, but I wonder, especially with what's happening now. And I hate these lists that people make. And by the way, there's a whole separate discussion that should be had about how many of people who grew up in the Dati Lumi in the national religious community are now falling as soldiers in the Gaza operation. It's might be even close to 50% at this stage, but it's definitely, you know, at least 45%. which is a higher representation than what they are in the population. And then maybe that says something about their values and their education and why there's so many in these combat units. But you're not seeing those people, you're not seeing funerals in B'nai Brak or in Beitar Elit or in Modi'in Elit. And the question that and those are Haredi predominant towns for our listeners, but what I think is happening, and I think people can say, okay, Torah is important, but there is a national burden. And the national burden is not Torah right now. It is military service. And we see the threats that are around our borders, and they're not going away. They're only going to be more severe. And I'll just add one other thing, right? And then I want to hear what you have to say. You know, back in 2015, the Knesset, right, passed a law that they were going to start to see the gradual decline of, or the shortening of military service. And it was 2020 in July was when the service was actually cut down. It was supposed to go down to 2.5 years, and it stayed at 2.8. But it was supposed to go down to 2.6. It's not going to go down to 2.6. It's not going to stay at 2.8. They're already talking about increasing back to 3, and even maybe increasing for women. And reservists, miluimnikim, are going to have to do 30 to 45 days a year, right, to be taken out of the workforce and away from their families. We have a pool of talent that we're not tapping into. And those are the 11 or 12,000 Haredim who turn 18 every single year. Should we not be using them?
No, I didn't say that. Of course, we could use them, and you see Netzach Yehuda is a fact that we could. But on the other hand, it's really not easy. As a Haredi mother, I say, if you send today your child into the army, 50% of the chances he won't come out Haredi, even if he goes to Netzach Yehuda. And that's a sad thing. And it's not, and we have to change it. But if there won't be a will from the other side, it won't be changing. And I'm not putting it only on the other side. Of course, the Haredi community has to take part. And each one that doesn't learn should go to the army. And there's a lot of them. And if they will be able to, they will take part. If someone won't be able to do it in the army, he will be very happy a lot. And I think that tens of thousands of Haredim that want to do Shirut Leumi. You could give Shirut Leumi missions like driving in the army or you know, doing a lot of things that today soldiers are doing. And we could find a solution. I promise right. You, we could find a solution. We just have to want and to talk normally. So, like big children.
So Michal, Rivka makes a point that also Yossi said, if they want us the Haredim, then you, the state or the government, have to create programs that are respectful of us. And by the way, that would apply also to university. But before we get to university programs for a moment, if there's a will, there's a way, as the saying goes. And the question that see, I wonder is when we come out of this whole thing, and you're saying, you know, it's not October 7th, Yaakov, it is the larger year that we've just been through as a country here. There are kind of two ways to go about, or three ways almost. Option one is status quo, we don't do anything, right? I don't see that happening. Option two is to expect to build programs to try to do it with them sensitive and with, you know, to try to work together with the community, and it'll start small and we'll work up as Rivka and Yossi pretty much articulated. And option three is, I don't want to call it sanctions, but it's almost like sanctions. It's we're cutting off stipends. We're stopping the budgets. There's no more money to yeshivas. We're going to change things from the top down. Where do you think the country is going?
Well, I don't see number three happening in the current government. So that's, you know, out the window. But I think it also doesn't work, right? I don't think it's going to work. And I think Rick is completely right. This is a group dedicated to its values. They're able to tell us sentences like Rivka saying, I'm not going to send my son to the army because I'm worried about his religious state of mind when he's done. I'm worried about sending my son to the army because he's gonna die. This is, you know, it's a different state, and it's something that needs to change so profoundly, the sense of obligation and the sense of understanding that studying Torah that you believe is a very strong and important value, which I understand that you're willing to go to jail for, is not enough to protect this country. We need soldiers. And at some point, if indeed the population will increase in a certain way, this is going to be a problem. So what do we do about this? We have to find a way to incorporate them in society, but without losing core value, which is we need people to go and fight for this country. We need people to live in a society where women are equal to men. We need them to join a society in which Arabs are equal to Jews. We need them to join a society in which gays are equal to non-gays. We have to define the values that unite us all, and then move from there. If the values are not shared, and this is where we're at, then we have to decide which value we want to give up. And this will depend either on demographic or on some ways to change them. So for me, if you're asking me, let's talk pragmatically. What do I do in academia? If I don't want to have a room in which a woman is less than a man, because a woman cannot teach a man and a man can't teach a woman, right? That's not equal. Equal opportunity laws and Bagatz said that. So what do I do in order to do that? So I will build Khinah that will wrap the Chagadim around them. And just, the Hebrew University does that. And then follows them and invest the money instead of very, very expensive separate classes. Give them special, you know, classes after class and help them with their special needs. And each Haredi will have their own ways. But we defend the core value that the university stands for. Women and men are equal. That's, I think, something, you know, at some point you have to say, what's the same way that I will never separate a class, Ethiopian Jews from the rest of the Jews. I will never separate men from women. There's some values you don't give up, you know, you don't sell the store. So for me, this is it. If I will become a minority and the values of the society of equality will change, then, you know, I'll have to decide if this is the country I want to live in or not. That's a different question altogether. But so long as we've decided as a society that equality is something that we all share, that's something we have to decide not to give up on and do the things we need to do in small measures, but not losing sight of the bigger picture.
Rivka, what would happen potentially if there is going to be a new government inside Israel? After some time, there's a lot of predictions that there will be elections in 2024. And looking at the polls right now, it doesn't look like Netanyahu will be that prime minister based on the current polls. I'm very skeptical of those current polls, but put that aside. And there is a government that does not include the ultra-Orthodox, which is a possibility. We've had a couple governments like that in the past. And they decide to go the sanctions route. They decide to cut those stipends, cut those budgets, and start to even go as maybe as extreme as Yair Lapid wanted to do back when he was finance minister in 2013, 2014, and sanction specific yeshiva institutions who don't meet the quotas of how many of their students need to serve in the IDF. How will the community react to that?
So I once wrote research about it. I took the numbers. I just took the numbers of Haredi soldiers in the army before Yair Lapid and Haredi soldiers in the army after Yair Lapid. And there was really, it went down so sharp. And I really showed in my work that sanctions, I think, won't work. And I don't know if you know, there's a small group in Jerusalem that are crazy. And if and they don't even want to go and sign in the army for staying in yeshiva. So they go to jail all the time and they sit on the rails of the train in Jerusalem and they just...
They used to block the road near my office every couple of weeks.
Yeah. They are crazy. And I believe that if there will be sanctions, we will all... be crazy. I see my son that is really a normal boy, and if he won't be able to stay and sit and learn, he will go to the army if that's the law and he listens to the laws in any aspect. But if there will be sanctions and students from his yeshiva will be taken, will be forced to go to the army, I believe he will sit on those rails too.
You know, I think what we have here, and I want to be cognizant of time, but I think what we have here are two people who represent different opinions, but are able to have that conversation in a civil way. And I wonder if whatever happens after the election, if there is going to be one, if we're able to do that, because my fear is that when we come out of this war, whenever that might be, or at least the higher intensity stage of this war, many other things will erupt within Israeli society, including this issue. And people are going to say what was can no longer be. And that will lead to a very tough moment for on a social level of where it will lead to just more hostility towards the ultra-Orthodox community, more of a feeling of alienation. And I think people like Michal explained earlier are fed up to a large extent.
I have to say something. I don't like to be presented as a Haredi hater.
I didn't say that. I didn't call you a Haredi hater.
Not you, but I'm saying I don't like that position. I am a scholar of Talmud. That's what I do. And I fell in love with those materials because I am... I love our culture. I think there's beautiful things in it. And I think we're tied into it very, very strongly and for a very good reason. I grew up in a religious environment and this was my education. It doesn't come from that. But I think there's something to be said about why my emotion all of a sudden are much heightened. We've seen, you know, in the middle of a war, a huge transfer of funds for yeshivot. Or for sectorial needs, which, by the way, some of them are very much needed. But the way it's done, the sectorial way in which a group, because of a certain political situation, gives them certain powers, and the dismissal of looking and taking a step back and looking at the needs of a society as a whole, and soldiers dying, there's something to be said about the way the leaders of that sector are acting in the past year and a half. And there's something to be said about that heightening the differences between them. I say that also about gay rights, and I'm talking about women's rights. The way that the conversation is being held and being talked about doesn't lead me to think that there is someone on the other side willing to see me as equal or willing to compromise. It's just requests for more and more, and also intimidation. At the end, we'll be more powerful. At the end, we'll be the majority. I don't know. In the meantime, I want to keep the society as equal as I can. And the conversation doesn't start by haters from our end. There's two sides to this argument. And my side, and you're right, Rivka, I'm terrified. I'm scared because I saw what that means to me as a woman. And I have no defenses. But God's ruling is completely ignored. I have no ruling. But there's a bagatz about the separate hours in Kiryat Arba in the general pool, and the hours for women and men, and it's not being kept, and no one cares. Nothing is being done. So I do not trust the this keeping my rights or gay rights or, you know. So I'm terrified and I'm scared, and I have my own set of values to uphold. It's not that it's non-existent and the other side has value and I need to like go forward and acknowledge the other side's value. I have values too. Equality is my value. And I don't want to give it up. And what price do I have to pay in order to bring another group that doesn't share my values? That's a question that is a serious, serious question that needs to be asked.
Rivka, is there anything you'd like to say to wrap that up?
I just want to say it's a point of view because you were talking about budgets and my girls are told that 5 months since the beginning of the year, I'm still learning just until 1 o'clock in the afternoon because they didn't get Ofek Hadash that any other student in the state gets. So I believe it's a point of view. I believe we could find a solution. We just have to come down hills towards one towards each other and try to talk. I believe everything is
solvable.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us today. You can find all our episodes where you get your podcasts. Please share widely and give us a 5-star review. We will see you back here soon.